Talk RL podcast is all reinforcement learning all the time, featuring brilliant guests, both research and applied. Join the conversation on Twitter at TalkRL Podcast. I'm your host, Robin Chauhan. Today I'm here with Arash Ahmadian. Arash is a researcher at Cohere and Cohere for AI. He's focused on preference training of large language models. He's also a researcher at the Vector Institute of AI. Welcome, Arash.
Hey, Robin. Thanks for having me. Super excited to be here.
Great to have you today. Can you tell us in your own words, what do you focus on exactly?
Currently, my main focus is on reinforcement learning from human feedback / preference training. But previously, I've done some work in efficiency, quantization, and mixture of experts.
And is your role at Cohere, is it really research or do you also do applied work?
It's mostly research. So previously, I was at Cohere for AI. I was a research scholar there. It was throughout my time there that I got exposed to reinforcement learning from human feedback and preference training. And the reinforced paper, which we're going to talk about momentarily, is actually an artifact of that scholarship. Currently, I do research mostly in Cohere itself.
So yeah, speaking of your recent work, let's get to it. This paper is named Back to Basics, Revisiting Reinforced Style Optimization for Learning from Human Feedback in LLMs. That's first author yourself, 2024. So what is the main idea in this paper, Arash?
Really, at a high level, it's the main goal of the paper is to convey the message that optimization for fine-tuning language models with reinforcement learning is actually not difficult as an optimization problem. And, you know, methods that are pretty obsolete, like reinforce and vanilla policy gradient in deep reinforcement learning, are actually quite applicable in this setting. So it really has a focus on sort of taking a step back and trying to show the fundamental differences between deep RL and RLHF, or fine tuning of large language models, as settings.
Okay, now there's many different methods that people have presented and talked about for doing preference training. And so we definitely hear about PPO. You're presenting here reinforce and what you're calling RLOO. And you can tell us more about that soon. But other things we've heard about, DPO, IPO, RAFT, KTO, can you give us a general idea of what are the different groupings here? What is different between all these methods without getting into all the details? There's kind of a couple different themes here. How do these methods differ?
Starting from all the way at the top, you have offline versus online. And offline just means, you know, it's you don't do any sampling or you don't get feedback during your training process. So in my mind, DPO, IPO, KTO, they all fall into the offline category because they all skip the training of the reward model phase altogether. That's offline. And then you get it online where, you know, PPO, reinforce, and RLU, which are really like reinforcement learning algorithms, come in. And you have iterative fine-tuning methods, which are also online, for example, like RAFT. But they don't really do policy gradient. They don't do RL in traditional sense. They use the reward model as a mechanism to filter their generations throughout training. So really, iterative fine-tuning methods, they trade off the optimization complexity and the tuning complexity of, you know, reinforcement learning algorithms with and also some of the practical limitations with higher time required to sample generations training. But you know, you have PPO, proximal policy optimization, which is sort of the de facto RL algorithm, which is sort of made its way from deep RL to RLHF, and reinforce and RLU. RLU is really builds on the reinforce estimator itself, but it's closer to RAFT and iterative fine tuning in that it actually leverages multiple samples. So I would say RLU is sort of a mix between iterative fine tuning and reinforcement learning. And you have PPO, which is your typical policy gradient or off policy, but online optimization.
So, and which ones did you focus on in your paper and what did you find?
We focused on a couple of different axes. The main axis was really seeing if PPO was the right tool for doing RL and or doing RLHF. And what I mean by that is PPO has a lot of bells and whistles, and it has a lot of augmentations built on top of it or into it that are designed to prevent instabilities in your optimization procedure. And these are all borrowed from DeepRL and you know, the instabilities and the high variance issues that come with it. And you know, the what we posited and we empirically sort of showed is that you don't need all the complexity of PPO when you're doing RLHF with a pre-trained large language model. Something like Reinforce is a much better fit. So that was the first thing that we focused on. And then we also sort of showed that iterative fine-tuning methods like RAFT, where you have access to a reward model, and you use it as a means to filter online generations throughout your training, they sort of fail to make full use of the samples you generate, and they have issues with robustness due to this filtering that they do. So, and we also showed basically RLU, which is reinforced leave one out, is basically a more robust and better version of RAFT in the paper. We also did benchmark DPO as a baseline, but the focus was more on the online paradigm as opposed to offline.
Can you say a little bit more about RLU? How does that work, reinforced leave one out?
RLU stands for reinforced leave one out. I kind of know it's not the best name, but in the spirit of going back to basics, we sort of kept a name of where it was proposed originally. But at a high level, again, it builds on the reinforced estimator. And again, the reinforced estimator really at its core is a means, it provides a means to do gradient updates if you want to maximize the probability of your policy generating high reward generations. And what you have a notion of baseline when dealing with the reinforced estimator, because it's known to have really high variance for a variety of reasons. And baselines, what they do is, they reduce the variance of this of the gradient updates, but they keep it unbiased, so you don't do your optimization remains not biased. What reinforced leave one out does is it generates multiple samples for a given prompt and looks at each the gradient updates for each of those samples individually, and uses the remaining samples to create this notion of baseline to reduce variance, but keep the estimator overall unbiased. So if you think about it in the lens of traditional RL or active critic algorithms like PPO or A2C, there you have a value network which is meant to reduce variance, and it's sort of similar to a baseline, but there are some differences. Here, you don't have an extra network or a learned baseline. You create this on-the-fly sample-specific baseline through generating multiple samples. And that's, it's pretty effective in terms of practice. And it's also much easier to implement compared to when you have to load up multiple copies of the model.
And can you remind me of the relationship between reinforce and vanilla policy gradient?
In the tradition, in the Sutton Introduction to RL paper book, reinforce is treated as or is presented as a policy gradient algorithm, full fledged MDP where your traditional RL problem setting, but really reinforce is also an estimator given a single generation from your current policy. So in the paper, what we do is to distinguish between the reinforced estimator itself, and once you actually build it into the RL framework where you have multiple states, potentially non-terminal states that you visit in a trajectory before you get to the terminal state, and you have intermediate rewards, you can use that reinforced estimator to and look at partial rewards, and we call that vanilla policy gradient. And the reason this distinction is actually pretty important is because we talk about action modeling, where you model a single token as an action, whereas, or if you model the entire generation as a full-on single action. So Yeah, that's really the main difference. But at their core, they both use the reinforced estimator. One, the reinforced algorithm, as we refer to it, only uses it on a trajectory level. But then vanilla policy gradient uses the reinforced estimator at partial completions as well.
Okay, so I kind of dismiss reinforce in the same way I don't pay much attention to tabular RL because it seemed obsolete to me. And then, but in the paper you say why reinforce is applicable here, even though it doesn't work well typically in deep RL, like in robotics or something. Can you explain why it makes sense here, but it's been dismissed in other areas?
Yeah, so really it's an issue of variance. It's the same old problem of variance bias trade-off when you're trying to estimate the return trajectory and the return of the full trajectory. And this is not a new problem. It's, you know, to my knowledge, it's the first mention for the variance bias trade-off for the return estimator is from the Watkins dissertation in 1989. I think on page 86, there's a brief mention about this trade-off. And then there's a couple of works, I think in 2011, there was some theoretical work on theoretical bounds on the variance and bias trade-off. But really, reinforce has really high variance, especially when you're starting from a random initialization of your policy or a not decent one. And this high variance is actually pretty detrimental in settings like deep RL or in Atari games and whatnot. And that's why that's the whole idea of why actor-critic algorithms exist. So the original policy gradient method was you know, vanilla policy gradient, where you don't do any bootstrapping, as we call it. You don't have a value function which you use to estimate your full trajectory return, and you use the full return of the trajectory as you sampled it in your optimization, and you use the learn baseline as a means to reduce variance. You don't use it in bootstrapping. That's why it's called a learn baseline as opposed to a value network, really. But for example, you have TD learning. It's an extreme case. It's the extreme case of doing bootstrapping using your value function, meaning that you don't use the entire trajectory return in estimating the return itself. You just look, let's say, n steps ahead, and then cut it off and use the estimate of the value network to estimate the rest of the return of your trajectory. And this introduces bias. It's a well-known issue. This introduces bias. And in the case of RLHF, you don't really need to reduce variance more. You don't need to trade off. You don't need to introduce bias to reduce variance. And introducing bias is actually really detrimental to your optimization performance. And PPO, at its core, like any other actor-critic algorithm, it does this trade-off to an extent. PPO uses generalized advantage estimation, which has a specific way or a hyperparameter to tune this trade-off. And if set correctly, that advantage estimation actually reduces to reinforce with a learned baseline. And we empirically found that actually performs best, which, you know, is a return estimator that does not introduce any bias into your optimization. But in theory, it has high variance. Now, the reason, like I alluded to, the reason why this, in theory, reinforce should not be practical, but it is in the case of LLMs and RLHF, is because your initial policy is really strong. You have a pre-trained model, which is super strong. And then on top of that, most cases you do SFT, so supervised learning. And this gives you a really good starting point as to start, you know, your RL, which is not really applicable in deep RL. It's really rare that you come across policies that are this good at the start. Most of the time you start from random init. So that's really the main reason why reinforce is not only applicable, but actually it's the right tool for the job because it's unbiased. It doesn't introduce any bias into your optimization.
So you've totally removed the critic and you're saying it's better.
Yeah, so you have for vanilla policy gradient, you have a learned baseline as opposed to a critic. So you don't use the, it's not really a value network anymore. So you don't use it as a critic. You just use it to reduce variance, basically. And that's better because it doesn't introduce bias into your optimization. Now, that's, you know, that's really the main aspect of PPO, which, you know, because it's an active critic algorithm, you have other things like, you know, clipping and trust region policy optimization, things that go into PPO. And in providing further empirical evidence that really high variance is not an issue, if you can look at, for example, how large your gradient updates get and how many times they are clipped, because you have this notion of clipping the gradient updates in PPO as if they get too large or if they're too off policy. And really, you don't really clip that much, which points to like the gradient, you know, the loss landscape being pretty smooth, and you don't need to deal with high variance gradient estimates. And that's why you also don't need to further reduce variance at the cost of introducing bias.
So it sounds like you're finding that PPO is overkill for this problem.
100%.
Does that surprise you? Were you shocked when you found this, or were you totally expecting this? How did you get to this? How did you get to the point of asking this question? And then how did you, you know, kind of feel about it when you saw the answer?
How this whole thing really came about was, you know, I was reading the original works by OpenAI on like summaries from human feedback and WebGPT, where they do mention using PPO for the RLHF stage. But then I kind of really didn't understand why, or, you know, the reasoning behind using PPO, as, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, it's the de facto RL algorithm borrowed from deep learning. So really the question in my mind was that, you know, is it a proper way to do RL in language models or using PPO? And because like the setting is really, really different. And that's how this whole, I guess, research direction really started. And honestly, I mean, obviously, I think I would be lying if I say the results did not surprise me the slightest. They did surprise me, but to a small extent, because I kind of had, you know, I was with my intuition and like some of the earlier experience I had with playing around with this stuff, I did expect Reinforce to outperform PPO, but I did not expect it to outperform it by this much, as, you know, as reported in the paper. Because the results are pretty significant in terms of the shift between PPO and vanilla policy gradient / reinforce.
So you talk about the difference between treating the whole completion as a single rewardable action, like a bandit, like in a bandit setting,
yep,
versus treating each token as a separate action, which is more how we would generally think of multi-step RL. Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that? I mean, like, don't all the chat systems of today treat it as a bandit?
In the RL formulation, you treat each token as an action, in that when you learn a value network, you output a value estimate for the partial completions, not, you know, for the partial completions, which are, you know, due to the tokens you generated. You don't output a single value estimate only for your given prompt, right? In practice, you know, how PPO is implemented under the hood and how it's used for RLHF, you treat each token as a single action. And because you have the KL component in the reward, you're able to define really partial completion rewards that are not the same throughout your generation. Even though you only, again, also in practice, the reward you get is only attributed to the EOS token at the end of your generation.
So I wonder if you could explain that a little bit clearer. You're saying that we're only getting rewarded for the whole thing, mm-hmm, but somehow there's still a token by token notion of value. Is that what you're saying? I didn't understand the second part.
The reward, so for regularization, we have this like KL components, or, you know, the difference between the log probs of the generation built into the reward like function itself, by definition. So, you know, it's R minus beta times the KL. Now, that component, the second component, is actually token-wise, because you take the difference between the log probabilities of each token, but then you sum it up to get the sequence level KL. That's the component which leads really to the single token action modeling being applicable here, because you can define a different trajectory reward given your starting position and your partial completion, even though your reward model gives the same true reward for the entire completion, but then you have different KL components, depending on where you start, right? Because you skip over some tokens. And that's precisely the whole argument. One of the main arguments of the paper is that you should treat it as a bandit problem. And in a bandit problem, you only should use the reinforce estimator on the entire trajectory return. And you just ignore partial completions. And you don't care about the token level or the partial completion level reward, which really, in practice, PPO and RL, as typically used for RLHF, they don't make this distinction. So it is more intuitive to do a bandit modeling because you only attribute a single reward to the entire generation. But in practice, that has not happened, which is precisely why we try to emphasize that in this work.
Do you have any thoughts about the whole LLM, RLHF, human preferences paradigm today, the way the general framework works? Like, do you think we can get further just by making some improvements to it, or are we going to need to really change to a different framework? And I wonder, one of the things, like you were saying, you only get the reward at the end.
Mm-hmm.
at the end of the completion, but I'm sure some people are working on complete per token rewarding or self play, or we've heard rumors about Q-star. Do you have any thoughts about these things, or quite different paradigms?
It really depends on the nature of your reward signal, the type of optimization you do. In the typical human preference training, you give it the entire sequence and you get a single reward at the end. The idea, in the paper, and what the position is for this, you should use a bandit formulation because it's just less computationally heavy and it's more intuitive. Now, there are other use cases, whereas you actually have access to intermediary rewards, like let's say you have code, right, or math. There you can extract intermediary rewards for, let's say, for each line of code or for each equation actually written in your proof. There it does not really, the bandit formulation would probably lag behind as opposed to something like vanilla policy. If you want to keep using the reinforce estimator, you would use something like vanilla policy gradient, where you actually take into account the multi-state transitions and, the whole shebang of having intermediary states before your terminal state. So from that aspect, it's really a question of what you're trying to optimize and what's the objective and what's the nature of the data. There has been some work, like you mentioned, like DPO, IPO, KTO, and FTPO, where they try to remove the RL component of RLHF, and they do make the problem simpler. But it's within one problem formulation that's really applicable, and that's for human preference. Whereas where you have the Bradley-Turing model and you get a sequence level reward, really is where they work also best in practice. So yeah, as with regards to key star type training, again, rumors. I'm also speculating myself, but I think it's. I think for tasks that require more reasoning and are more complicated than just human preference on the typical data sets that the research community works on, you will need intermediary rewards to enable generalization, like I mentioned, in code or math. And for those types of things, then something like Q networks or again a vanilla policy gradient reinforce, I think would work pretty well.
So do you think your work that we discussed here could impact how preference training is done at Cohere? And can you share anything about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. So, you know, Cohere as a company and, you know, is always up to date with regards to what's happening in the research field. And this is no exception. You know, this work is indeed public. And even though it was an effort by people within Cohere for AI and Cohere, the findings in it are pretty significant in that, you know, one, it removes a lot of complexity, which you know, enable pretty, let's say, smoother adaptation for you know, the algorithms like reinforce, ARLU, or vanilla policy gradients into things like, you know, product or prod models as opposed to something like BPO. But also, I think, really, zooming out from at a high level, what this work really tries to emphasize is the optimization nature of RLHF, or learning from an external reward signal or an external signal where you have a pre-trained model, is not difficult. And it's really about how you curate the signal, how you actually come up with that signal, and the type of data you have access to. So the focus should really be in reward model training, how to make our reward models more robust, how to make them be more accurate, better generalizable, things of that nature, as opposed to coming up with ways to make the optimization itself, given a out-of-the-box reward model, better. So I think these findings will have an impact for sure at Cohere, and I imagine at other places too. Because these are pretty high level statements about the general, you know, positioning of the field as a RLHF as a paradigm, as opposed to, you know, proposing a single method. Yeah, which I'm quite happy about.
I bet. Congrats. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think I'm glad that we could get this work out to clear up some of the because it really does shake the foundational beliefs in RLHF and things that people have sort of stuck to for the past couple of years, because, you know, they were just the first papers that proposed RLHF, they just used them. You know, no one had really taken the time to dig into, okay, why do we use PPO? Is it really necessary? You know, and try to discern the differences between deep RL and LLMs and you know, RLHF.
Yeah, well, that's the reason I wanted to have you on the show today. I noticed that in the paper when Matthias shared it in the thread on Twitter. Just a note, I heard about your paper in the replies to Nathan Lambert's tweet on Twitter X. Nathan tweeted about the use of reinforce in Google Gemma, which I was asking about, and Arash's colleague and co-author Matthias Galle at Cohere shared this paper on the thread. Nathan is at Allen AI, and he was our guest back in episode 19, so check that out and check out his Twitter and his newsletter, interconnects.ai. What do you hope to work on in the future, or plan to work on in the future?
I think the main thing for me now is really digging into the reward modeling aspect, or not even calling it a reward model, and having an external evaluator or an external signal that you can use to, you know, align, quote unquote, your language model. So really digging into how we can make these reward models more robust. How can we effectively incorporate continuous, you know, let's say user data into our reward models? How can we, you know, ensure robustness, generalizability, things of that nature? And also, there, you know, I'm still in Cohere for AI, but, you know, I was a research scholar within Cohere for AI, and there we, you know, we have a pretty really big focus on multilinguality, and you might have heard of the AYA model, which we released pretty recently, and it's, you know, it's the best multilingual model out there, which is open source. And I think intersection of RLHF with a multilingual model hasn't really been explored, and it hasn't really been done justice to in the research field. So I'm also pretty excited to explore things in that direction, at the intersection of, you know, multilingual models and human preferences, or having external signals that you can do RL on. But yeah, those are, you never know what happens. I feel like, especially with the case for me earlier on, I was doing more of the efficiency type of work, quantization and mixture of experts, and now I'm doing reinforcement learning. But yeah, that's for the near term future. That's what I see.
So outside your own work, are there other interesting things happening in RL or in preference training that you want to mention?
Yeah, so there's been a sort of a plethora of work of trying to, in the direction of having better evaluators and, having better external signal, like I mentioned. And one paper that did catch my eye was, self-rewarding language models. I'm not sure if you've, familiar with that, but it's at its core is, again, taking out the notion of reward model and treating the policy slash the general model as an evaluator on its own. I think paradigms or systems where it's mostly synthetic, but there is little supervision from an outside source, whether it's human or some other thing, like let's say a tool or a web browser. I think those are pretty promising, but things like the self-rewarding language model paper, they're a step in the right direction in that they try to minimize the dependency on human feedback. I'm personally a bit skeptical about to the degree where we can completely remove any outside influence. It doesn't need to be humans, like any outside contact with such synthetically driven systems, but I think we can definitely minimize it. Minimize, but make it count the minimal interaction with outside tools and outside the supervisors. So yeah, I'm honestly pretty excited for that. But also, I really hope to see more research on really digging into reward models and the notion of signal, the signal that we're trying to align the language model to. I feel like as a research field in general, with LLMs, that type of work will be less flashy, but I think it will really matter in the long run in terms of providing a better understanding of like RLHF again as a paradigm, but also tackling problems which really will make it huge impact, as opposed to things like coming up with a new method to do the optimization, because really at the end data is king, and the data is directly used to train or is used to provide that external feedback.
And while you're here, is there anything else you want to mention to the audience?
It was pretty great to be on here. I'm super happy that I got the chance to sort of put a spotlight on the high level a position of the paper, and I hope really works like this encourage researchers to sort of like take a step back and not really take things for granted just because the first people who've published in paradigms sort of propose those methods, but really take everything step by step and question everything, and it's their validity in the higher level. So yeah, thanks for having me, though.
Thanks so much for being here, Arash Amadian. This has been great.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. Thanks again for having me.